About 22 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday morning, Don Clark joins us. Dr. Don Clark, a resident, a denizen of Garden Valley, Texas, a biochemist and a vigneron by trade, and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a scientific whiz. Would that be accurate, Don? I think so. Oh, I've lost your audio. Wait a second. Where are you? Oh, there we go. I'm sorry. I had a button not pushed that I needed to push to get you on the air, so...
Oh, I wasn't apologies. On the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
This has not been the most efficient of days for yours truly. Anyway, you are a scientist, and you've got valuable experience in the pharmaceutical industry, and in a very interesting way, today's article pertains to all that, or your experience pertains to it. The article is from the Institute for Creation Research, and it's headlined, "Different Interpretations of Same Data is Routine." And it talks about COVID-19 and political decisions and decisions by other agencies and just by individuals reacting to the science and how they interpret data. So my question to you here is, because there's so much confusion out there, is science responsible, or is the interpretation responsible, or are we just not capable of handling that accurate information? Are there too many other factors involved? Is science the solution or the problem?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a two-edged sword there. Yes, science is sometimes the problem, but at the same time, it's how you interpret data is, I think, at the core of this. And sometimes you don't have all the data that you would like to have. I mean, a true scientist never has enough data. You know, you start looking at the data and you have a little bitty piece, and then you're being asked, in this case, especially with COVID, to make some predictions and where is all of this going, and how many people are going to die, for example, how many people are going to be infected, and you just have just a little bit of data, you know, at least initially here in the United States, to try to figure that out, for example, and so a lot of pressure is on you to come up with some answers.
Well, in fact, let me relate this to meteorology, which is sort of science and sort of intuition. People are paid to make forecasts, so they will make a forecast, regardless of how much data they may have, they will make a forecast. Is science in the same position with respect to something like the pandemic? I mean, we turn to science, we say, what's going on? And there is tremendous pressure to come up with at least data and maybe data plus recommendations. Is science qualified then to make recommendations?
You mentioned one of my favorite topics, meteorology. There's one of our local weather forecasters. He's been around for a long time. In fact, I think he just retired. And when he did a weather forecast, he would show three or four possible routes of the potential weather. And he would say, now, all of this is computerized data, and the storm could just, you know, give us 18 inches of the big white stuff, or it could go away entirely. So it's somewhere in between. And his judgment was, but at least we're free to interpret the data as he sees it, and as we would like to interpret it, or you know, at least see that there are other choices.
Yeah, Don, I don't mean to snow you here, but this relates to the Breakpoint program we just heard. When it comes to weather, if I used to joke on the air, we need to hire a Laplander to be on our weather reporting staff, because reportedly a Laplander, from experience in the environment, can sniff the air and predict a snowstorm 3 days in advance. I mean, they're that sensitive to their environment. So is intuition and training more reliable than science plus technology? Do we get carried away with the technology to the point where we ignore what our gut is telling us?
Oh, I think we certainly have, especially in recent science. I mean, just take the medical field, for example. You know, a doctor used to be called a physician because they practiced medicine. They knew that they didn't have it right, but they practiced it. And they would do all kinds, before the age of technology and imaging and all of this other stuff, they would poke and probe and listen and talk to you for a while, and you know, with their experience, then they would come and say, well, this is what I think you have, and this is what, you know, I think we need to do. Today, we rely so much more on imaging, for example, in that field, than we ever possibly did. So the new doctors that are coming out, they need to see a picture, and from the picture, they're trying to interpret what's going on inside instead of poking and prodding, prodding you to see how you feel and does this hurt or does, mm-hmm. you know, doing. Remember the old method of palpitations where they would actually pound.
Yes, I do. On your chest. Even just tapping on your knee with a little hammer. They don't do that anymore. You know?
They don't do those things, and that, you know, gave the doctors much more information than all of this imaging stuff, which can be interpreted many different ways. So I think we are beginning to rely way too heavily on these specialized instrumentations as opposed to saying, okay, my experience tells me that the weather, you know, from... You know, I've been in this field for 50 years, or whatever it has to be, that when we see a pattern like this, it's going to be going this way, and it's going to be dumping this amount of snow. And the computer programs, which, you know, they're programmed, they're not infallible. They, you know, somebody had to program them, you know, is saying, well, it could be either this or it could be either that. And so.
And those are known as computer models, because you hear that term, too. That means it's a prognostication made by computer based upon data. And that relates down here
in the South. We've got the hurricanes, and they're always predicting. Well, you know, they're coming up with the various tracks that this particular hurricane that's developing, you know, in the Gulf is going to go, and how far up it's going to go. Is it going to go, you know, cut across Florida, or is it going to go up the coast of? The Atlantic coast, or where it's going to go, those, again, based on computer models and based on, you know, but at some point in time, you have to infuse into it, this is what my intuition has to say. Now, it's interesting that, you know, we have data, for example, in this article in Institute of Creation Research, just barely touched on it, really. We have data, we have observations from, post-flood fossils, for example, and the creationists would say, aha, you see, that's a result of a global flood. And this is the reason why we see this all over the world, and this is why, you know, all of these animals died off at the same time, is because of a global flood. And then an evolutionist will say, well, they didn't actually die off at the exact same time, and it would have been millions of years that these fossils formed, and they didn't form, you know, over a short period of time, and this, that, and the other. And see, that shows that there was evolution from this creature to the next creature. So you got the same data. You have, you know, the fossil record, for example. One group is interpreting it with a little bit of history called the Bible. Another group is just interpreting based on their idea that, absolutely evolution occurred. So therefore, we must interpret this data in the light of evolution. So your premise, what you start with, can often influence your interpretation of data. And I think that's a very important point to bring across as well.
If you built a house of cards by assumption after assumption after assumption and stopped updating your data, the odds are you're going to be wrong. At some point, that whole structure should collapse, and when you have history to refer to, that's not necessarily, you know, science has a role in that in terms of archaeology and paleontology and unearthing things, and again, that's accumulating data, but it still takes. I want to know what the weather's going to be today. Do I pick up my cell phone, or do I look out the window? I have a choice.
Well, I think you do both, right? I mean, you want to say, oh, I've got a bright, sunny day today. And if your cell phone says there's going to be a buckets of rain, you know, coming, then you want to you want to at least bring your umbrella with you when you go to work. I mean, because, you know, the bright,
sunny
day.
So you place a certain amount of trust in the science then.
Yeah, well, I mean, you to a certain degree, because it helps to, because they, after all, it's a prediction, right? The weather is a prediction. It's in, and when it says, you know, rain, it doesn't just say, it's a, sometimes it says it's 100% rain, but very often it says there's a 37% chance of rain today, or a 30%, or a 20%, or a 80% chance of rain today. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but now the models have gotten fairly good that they can say, all right, there's going to be, there's a 80% chance of rain today, and at 1 o'clock it's going to be 35%. And then 2 o'clock, it might be 45. So
okay, well, here's an example of how to interpret that information. They say it's going to be, there's an 80% chance of rain today. Now, does that mean that within a specific geographic area, 80% of the coverage will get rain, and 20% won't? Or does it mean that it will rain 80% of the time on you that day? The interpretation is still left wide open. Even meteorologists can't explain that to my satisfaction. What does it mean when it says 80% chance of rain and where you're standing, you know?
Right. Well, exactly. Because it could, it's obviously over a certain locale. And how big is that locale? You know, is it in my situation, is it, you know, 80% in Van and 60% in Lindale, which those two are about 12 to 15 miles apart, which is, you know, when you're talking about rain, that's pretty broad area. But I think we've come to understand, and the modeling and things have gotten pretty good, that we know, for example, there's a band of weather that it typically travels. And I know just from looking at the weather pattern that if, you know, the rain usually, I mean, the weather usually comes from the Dallas area over to our area. And you can watch that band kind of marching along, and you can, sometimes it slows down and sometimes it speeds up. And so, you know, the weather will change. The prediction will change constantly as that band gets closer and closer to you. So they continually update, you know, their models until it actually finally does rain, and now it's 100%.
Let's look at it. Let's look at another way to interpret data. The report is that face masks are effective in preventing the spread of COVID-19. That's what's been presented to us. There are contrary opinions. And so the first question that comes to my mind is just a plain old ordinary person here, not a scientist, is I want to know how they tested those masks.
Well, exactly. I don't think for example, let's talk about Fauci. First, he recommended not wearing masks, that masks aren't effective, you know, against the virus. And then he turns around and says, okay, wear your mask. So it wasn't necessarily that the masks are effective, but for whatever reason, he changed his policy and said, wear a mask. Now,
well, he made that first decision, as I understand it, not based on science, but upon social policy. There weren't enough masks to go around. So he wanted to make sure that hospital workers, healthcare workers, had access to the N95 masks. So if everybody was out there pilfering them, buying them, using them up, healthcare workers, that's the reason he gave afterwards. That really isn't science. That's maybe adding up how many masks there are available and determining there aren't enough. But okay, now 2 months later, there's enough, and he says, okay, there's enough masks to wear, so let's wear masks. is that based on science? I mean, was there more data on the efficiency, the efficacy of masks in between? We don't know that part.
Well, we do now. There's enough studies that have been done to know how effective masks are and which masks are effective and which masks aren't effective. And basically, it boils down to the N95 are the only effective masks to be wearing, but those you can't wear more than 30 minutes without getting hypoxia because of you're breathing in your own carbon dioxide and it doesn't breathe very well.
And those are properly fitted in a medical environment for specific purposes.
Not properly fitted. Mm-hmm. So now where do you go with all of this? People are going around wearing surgical masks, which are the blue masks, and this, that, and the other, and what does the science say? Well, the science says that those type of masks and the cloth masks that you make at home or that you buy from other, clothing companies that are now making masks, they haven't done the permeation studies that show that, hey, the virus is pretty small and you're wearing a mask that has pretty big holes in it. So while it may stop you, if you sneezed or coughed, that it won't stop your breath from going through, and the virus particles are carried through
being redirected, basically, is what that does. So whose responsibility is to correct that? Who's speaking up and saying masks don't work now? Or are there still conflicting studies on masks? My own common sense says that is, I'm not scientific. I'm not a scientist. I've worn a mask because we're told to do so. I'm saying it doesn't work. It's not effective.
Right.
I know what this mask does. It's not stopping anything because my glasses fog up. That's a clue in my head, That tells me something.
Yeah, it's leaking. I think, from the clinical studies, from the studies that I've read, and of course you can find different opinions. And basically is what we're talking about today is opinions and interpretations. But the studies that I have read have shown that the only effective mask for viruses of this size are the N95 masks. And it's not the N95 masks that have breathing holes in them, that is vents in them. It's the non-vented N95 mask. And properly fitted, because you don't want your breath, for example, to come up through your nose, past your nose into your glasses. If your glasses are fogging up, the mask is not effective. Now you've got a problem, because there are more problems wearing those type of masks long-term. In long term, meaning an hour or 30 minutes to an hour, than the benefits that you get from them. I have strong opinions about it. You have strong opinions about it. And now people have strong opinions one way or the other. You'll find that probably a greater percentage of the medical community is going to have strong opinions that, we must be wearing masks. You're inclined to say, well, maybe I should wear a mask, as the medical community is saying this. But the scientific studies, the actual clinical studies that have been done on general mask wearing, have shown that they are not effective, not the N95 ones, because those are the correct, have the correct pore size.
But the decision makers, the political apparatus, social apparatus in between, who is responsible for making policy and making law, is not passing that along. Are they not getting that information?
And maybe there's another agenda there.
I think so.
So now you've got a political agenda, perhaps. There also is a feel-good aspect to it. Not, you don't feel good wearing the mask, but a feel good, well, I'm protecting myself if I wear a mask.
And I'm demonstrating to others that I care. And if that's the law, I'm being obedient. I'm trying to help, not hurt. I'm not flying off on my own independent track here. But if it were up to me, I'd rip that thing off. And I think of employees in stores who have to wear them all day long, 8, 9, 10 hours. That's just not right, not healthy. It's not
healthy
good.
Because that now they start getting respiratory, other respiratory diseases, whether it be bacteria or mold, because they're wearing their mask constantly.
So why doesn't science speak up and say, hey, look, we just told you, masks don't work. Find something else. Find another route. Change your policies. Where's science now in this?
It's quite interesting because there were many scientists that were speaking up and continually speak up, but they have been silenced. They've been silenced in social media. They've been silenced in the mainstream media, and they've been called quacks, and we can't listen to people like that because they're quacks. And they're the ones with actual science that they're explaining, clinical studies that either they have done or clinical studies that other groups have done from around the world. It's not just the United States, but it's, from around the world that show that, hey, if you're wearing this type of mask, it's really not helping you. Even, CDC's own data in people who have interpreted, here we go, we got the data in people who have interpreted the data, analyzed the data, show that general mask wearing isn't stopping the disease. The mandates that even lockdown, we can talk about lockdown. Lockdown has... doesn't really have an effect on the general population as far as spreading the disease. So when you actually, and you can do retrospective studies because you can see those areas that have locked down and see that, hey, the disease hasn't stopped and the disease hasn't slowed down. And matter of fact, there's more people going to the hospital because of, in respiratory infections that they think might be the virus because of wearing masks or other conditions. And I think when all of this, settles down, we'll probably find out that lockdowns and mask wearing and all of this, kind of hysteria that has taken place with this virus will not be the drastic draconian efforts actually hurt us rather than or we're promoting good health.
Well, I think hysteria is the magic word there. You have some other feelings too about vaccines and vitamins. Explain your position on that, because I saw your Facebook entry the other day. You were talking about vitamin D. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, vitamin D, of course, is one of those vitamins that have all kinds of effect. It not only helps in the metabolism of calcium into your bones, but it also affects your immune system. That is, it boosts your immune system. It's involved in every cell in your body, not just your bone cells. It has been shown now to be quite effective. There are clinical studies with regard to this that protects you, first of all, against the virus. And then secondly, if you get the virus, you have a much, you generally have a much milder reaction than those people that don't have high enough vitamin D levels. Now, it's the studies that have been done are actual measurements of vitamin D levels in your blood, not how much you're taking, because we can, depending on, your source of vitamin D, when you take it, are you taking it with something else? Is it in a matrix, an oil-based matrix, for example, a fat-based matrix? It tends to get absorbed better. So the important parameter is the level of vitamin D in your blood. And so the science says, hey, if you want to protect yourself, you got to have 40 I think it's micrograms per something, whatever I put in my Facebook post there, 30 or 40, you know, micrograms per 100 mils or something of your blood that you need that level of protection of, you know, vitamin D, as opposed to if it's lower than that, you're more inclined to have a more severe reaction if you get the virus, and you have a greater chance of getting the virus because your immune system isn't protected as well.
Now, we're not in the position of giving medical advice here. I don't want to let people think that we're doing that, but you have experience in the pharmaceutical industry, and you know about this stuff. Does the vitamin D3 level in your blood vary from day to day? In other words, if you get tested today, and the typical chemical, the blood tests in physical exams today, which is sometimes all they do, gives you reports of all that stuff, how much vitamin D you have, and they may recommend that you take more, that your levels are too high and you should lay off of it. Does it change from day to day? I mean, is that test meaningful a month from after it's been given?
No, it's one of those things that it stays relatively constant, you know, depending on your habits, of course, for a period of time. So if you get tested today, if you get your blood levels tested today, it's probably a good indication that that amount of vitamin D has been in your blood for a while. You know, it's not going to jump. It's not going to jump twice as much or decrease twice as much, you know, a week down the road. It takes a while to build up, and then it takes a while to deplete if, for example, if you stop taking vitamin D. But of all of the, you know, of course, you know, all your vitamins in general, of course, vitamin C is important to fight infection. Zinc is important to fight infection. These things we've known, you know, for quite some time before the virus came along. But even, you know, even things like that are suppressed. I mean, why? Why do you want to suppress that? Why don't you? Why doesn't the general health practitioners say, you know, folks, if you just take, you know, 5,000 units or 10,000 units of vitamin D, get your blood tested after about a month or so, and see where you are, that will help protect you a lot more than the mask will.
Well, see, that gets us back to the Breakpoint program, which is more valuable, technology that spits out new data, or 50, 100 years of experience that tells you something different. If things changed, if things stayed the same, I think I'd go with intuition and experience, I think, over the latest computer readout. But that's just me. I'm that way. Been talking with Dr. Don Clark, a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. And there you will find a library, a reservoir of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. I have trouble with that word, biblical story of creation. And you ought to pay him a visit, creationmoments.com. We recommend it. And you might check, too, on Broken Road Radio. You can link to Creation Moments from there. You can also tap into a huge library of podcasts, conversations with Don on various topics that have to do with science and creation. And we encourage you to do that at brokenroadradio.com. Don, we'll see you next Tuesday. Look forward to that, okay?
Okay, very good.
Bye-bye.
See you next time, Don.
Yep, all right.